Most of us don't realize that simple changes in our own lives can have an effect on the safety of our public water supply. Dr. Diane Lewis says that if we all stop using pesticides, herbicides, and other toxic chemicals in our own yards, we can have cleaner, more healthful water. And she's written a book called The Great Healthy Yard Project, Our Yards, Our Children, Our Responsibility, in which she outlines the ways in which we can work together to protect our water. It's from She Writes Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Dr. Lewis to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
What got you thinking about how to protect our water?
I'm chair of the Water and Land Use Task Force of our nonprofit Bedford 2020 in Bedford, New York. And in the course of doing that, I learned that almost every stream, lake, and river in the country has pesticides and fertilizers in it.
You're an MD, an internist, and a nephrologist. Did your concern for water safety also grow out of your medical practice, especially when it comes to the health of our kidneys?
Well, yes, definitely. I was involved in both water transport and dialysis, where you have to clean the water. In dialysis, one of the things they worried about early on was dialysis dementia from aluminum. So I knew that small amounts of things could cause huge problems.
Because our kidneys are the filters in our bodies.
Our kidneys are the filters for...
Were you seeing a higher incidence of illnesses that you felt were caused by toxic chemicals in the water supply?
In medicine?
Mm-hmm.
No, because we were really fastidious about it. The big issue there was aluminum. But I think when we look at what's happened over time in the United States since the 1950s, when people started using these chemicals, there definitely is an increased incidence of a lot of diseases that can be attributed.
Is having a bright green lawn considered a must in your town, Bedford?
No, I think the aesthetic is really changing. I think maybe 20 years ago, it was. I think when you step over the border to Connecticut, it still is. But I think the new aesthetic is I'm happy to have my children on a few dandelions and a pretty good lawn and know that they're healthy.
There are towns that will fine you if your lawn doesn't look good and mowed.
I think you can have a beautiful lawn and take care of it naturally, and you can replace some of your lawn with native plants that attract native insects.
This past May, you wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times in which you said that homeowners actually use up to 10 times more harmful chemicals per acre than farmers. Where did you get that statistic?
That's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service statistic, and it sort of makes sense. Homeowners want everything to be perfect, and they're buying small amounts so that they don't mind spending a little extra to make their little patch of the world even better.
And you write that an emerald green lawn is actually a sign of pollution.
It is. And when you drive down my road in Bedford now, it's wonderful because you see a number of homes that have meadow areas, less mowed lawn, trees, plants, and then you see those one or two that are bright, dark green, out of season, and you know that they're doing things that the rest of us don't really want them doing.
What kinds of chemicals are used to create those bright green lawns?
People use fertilizer, synthetic fertilizers, and then they use, the weed and feed sort of. They use pesticides to get rid of all of the pests instead of using natural remedies which can do this.
I see lots of commercials on television for things like Roundup to get rid of weeds. If we don't use herbicides, how can we control weeds without having to pull new ones up every other week?
Well, there are a couple.
Or every week in my case.
Right, for us too. I think there are a couple of things. In the midst of turf, you can balance your turf better. You can make your soil culture better. You can replete with compost the different nutrients that are balanced that your soil biota needs to help your good grass seed grow. In localized areas like your patio or your driveway, you can use horticultural 20% vinegar.
But composts, some people don't have space for compost piles in their yards. It's a lot of work. And doesn't a compost pile attract vermin?
Compost pile doesn't attract vermin. If you don't have space for a compost pile, you can buy compost and you can buy organic compost. But if you don't have, if you do have some room and you're careful about what you put into a compost pile, it won't attract vermin.
You could also use garbage cans with holes in them, can't you? And then just rotate the
you can, but you really don't even need to. If you put in no oils and no meat and fish, and you're putting in greens, leafy greens, and eggshells and not the eggs, and yard scraps that are, you're not going to run into problems with vermin.
How do these chemicals get from our yards into the water system? Because in New York City, isn't all of our water coming from reservoirs in Ashokan and the Catskills?
Yeah, our water in New York City comes from Delaware, Sullivan, and Westchester County, which is pretty close. So there's east of Hudson and west of Hudson. And the Catskills are 125 miles away, so it's somewhat out of sight, out of mind. But how those people care for their lawns directly impacts our water and their yards. And when it rains, the water, these chemicals wash with the rainwater into our streams, lakes, rivers, and reservoirs, or they're absorbed into the deep groundwater aquifers.
Well, the New York City is not using an aquifer. We once had wells in Jamaica that produced, Jamaica, Queens, that produced the local water supply, but they have been discontinued, as I understand it. Maybe there are a couple out there still.
Right. New York City's water does come from these reservoirs, and it's all surface water, and how those people take care of their yards are important. What happens to the chemicals in New York City is that they wash into the river and then into the harbor, and then they're in the fish, and we eat them.
Maybe you can explain the difference between groundwater, surface water, and storm water.
The storm water is the rain that's coming out of the sky and rushes on the land, on the surface of the water. The surface water is when that water rushes downhill into streams and lakes, and when it's absorbed into the ground, that's a deep groundwater aquifer, and many of us in Westchester County and further north have wells.
How much of our water comes from watersheds?
All of our water in New York City comes from the watersheds. It's about 1.2 million acres in the Catskills in Westchester that contribute to this.
I understand that you can live in a small town, and if you're on one side of the street, you're actually getting water from a different watershed than the neighbor across the street.
Yes. And in Bedford, it's unusual because some of the town is now tapping into the New York City's Delaware Aqueduct because we had polluted some of the wells with nitrites from too many septics that were planned in the 1800s in the downtown hamlets. But we're also using well water in many parts of the town. So we have both. And we're in the New York City watershed. We have New York City reservoirs. We're also taking care of New York City's reservoir water.
My guest is Dr. Diane Lewis. Her book, The Great Healthy Yard Project, Our Yards, Our Children, Our Responsibility. Well, for those of us who live in city apartments and don't have lawns, why should we even be concerned about this?
Well, first, I don't think you can ask the people in Delaware County to take care of their yard responsibly if you're not willing to take care of things responsibly here. One of the things that everyone can do, whether you have a yard or not, is not to flush pharmaceuticals down the toilet because they also wind up in our water supply.
But they go into the Atlantic Ocean, at least.
And then they go into fish. Uh-huh. Right. And we eat them. Water is a circle. It's a shared resource. We all use it. And there are plenty of private homes in New York and Staten Island, Bronx and Riverdale and Mars Park and Brooklyn and Prospect Park and Williamsburg and in Queens and the Rockaways and Jackson Heights. There are 8 million people in New York. There are a lot of homes. And your listening area is broader. It's the greater New York area with maybe 23 million people, many of whom have private homes.
Isn't our drinking water treated and filtered before it comes out of our taps?
New York City is one of the largest untreated, unfiltered water supplies.
Is that why it tastes so good?
It is why it tastes so good. It's actually, there's the east of Hudson, the Croton watershed in Westchester, they are building a filtration plant for, but the west of Hudson from the Catskills is all unfiltered.
Is the water tested?
Oh, it's constantly tested. It meets all of the testing requirements. But studies show that the pesticides and fertilizers that we use are not removed by the treatment. There is some treatment for the drinking water. And tests show that even in cities where there's major treatment, these chemicals are not totally removed. They're in very small amounts. But those very small amounts, we now know that information is recent, can actually cause great harm, and they act together cumulatively, but the thresholds are individual.
Great harm in what ways, other than to our kidneys?
actually, they in 2009, the Endocrine Society published a study, a position paper, showing that 485 research papers that together produced an overwhelming amount of evidence that these chemicals that we're using on our yards and gardens disrupt the hormonal system. And that's not just sex hormones, but it everything in our body that's controlled by hormones, including thyroid hormone that affects brain development, neurological development, and the hormones of metabolism. So these chemicals in tiny, tiny amounts that we thought were inconsequential can in fact increase the incidence of diabetes and obesity. They can increase the incidence of ADHD and autism, and in fact, in laboratory animals, abnormal neural tube development occurs in rats that are exposed to these in utero. And they can also cause breast cancer, prostate cancer, and infertility by disrupting the sex hormones.
And that can happen from drinking New York City tap water?
It can happen from drinking tap water anywhere. New York City is the best in the world, and New York City does better than almost, and New York State does better than almost any other state in the union.
Because we're relying on rainwater?
Well, we're all relying on rainwater, and there are these chemicals in the rainwater, which is, polar bears actually have this in their fat because it's in the fish and it's in the rainwater. But New York has taken steps that other states haven't. New York has, since 2011, had the Safe Child Playing Field Act, which acknowledges the problems with these chemicals and doesn't allow them to be used on school fields. And since 2005, New York has regulated, it's the first city in the country, New York City, to regulate chemicals put on any New York City property or leased property. But these chemicals are ubiquitous. It's so important, but it's so easy for us to change. How many times do you get something that's so important as water quality that's so easy to change if people just change what they're doing?
The governor still hasn't decided on whether to allow fracking, and this is something you address in your book.
Briefly, yes.
But would fracking have an impact on the whole state or just the areas where the fracking is occurring?
Again, that's sort of debatable because they're trying to keep it outside of the watershed, New York City watershed, if it happens. Clearly, it'll then affect numerous farms where many of us get our food. But the way that I read it as proposed at the moment, but it's still being debated, they could still frack under some of the area that is in the watershed. So I am obviously concerned.
Sean from Long Island, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Diane. This is Sean O'Neill from Perfect Earth Project.
Oh, hi, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to bring up something we had talked about before about the co-occurrences of pesticides in drinking water and how they are much more dangerous than the single pesticide detections themselves, and how we don't really know a lot about how the pesticides interact with each other. You know, on Long Island, we have 117 pesticides found to date in our drinking water, and them interacting with each other definitely presents some problems. So if you could elaborate on that.
You're absolutely right, Sean. Thanks for bringing it up. Yes, all of these pesticides may be in small enough amounts to be considered acceptable, but they, in fact, if numerous chemicals will have estrogenic activity, then in fact the exposure becomes much more serious.
My guest is Diane Lewis, an internist and a nephrologist. Her book from She Writes Press is The Great Healthy Yard Project. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Dr. Diane Lewis, whose book is The Great Healthy Yard Project, Our Yards, Our Children, Our Responsibility. It is published by She Writes Press. We're going to take another call now. This one is from Emily from Briarcliff. Hi, Emily, who's also, eating, cooking, whatever?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just making some ginger tea. I didn't realize you'd hear that. I'm already totally sold on the program that you're suggesting. I have a huge compost pile. I don't put anything on my lawn. I pull out the weeds, and I pay people to pull out the weeds. But I'd love to know if there is a one-sheet explanation of why we should stop doing this that I could sort of slip into my neighbor's mailboxes or in their doorway or something, because I've already spoken to one of my neighbors, lives right across the street, and we have a relationship. They're nice people, but I've already asked them if they would consider doing their lawn organically, which I think is probably an improvement over.
Mm. And you don't want to come across as a nudge at the same time.
I think that's a great question, and it comes up all the time. And, in fact, we are at the moment printing exactly that. So you can go to the website and email me at info@tghyp.com, and I can send you something. And it keeps everything on a gentle, pleasant.
So what happens to these chemicals, these pesticides and herbicides? Does our body secrete them? Do our kidneys do their job?
Our bodies do secrete some of them, and some of them are stored in the fats mostly. And when they're stored, they increase over generations. This is called, biological addition. Biological addition, where it just accumulation. It just accumulates over time. But many of you only actually measure what you're measuring for. So if you test for glyphosate and it's broken down to AMPA, you won't measure the glyphosate. And AMPA is, in fact, biologically active for a long time. And 40% of people tested have glyphosate in their blood.
In arguing this position, isn't it difficult to prove the connections between pollution and illness? The courts have found that a really complicated situation.
It is a really complicated situation, but the Great Healthy Yard Project doesn't require that sort of legal proof. It requires absolute common sense. And we know that we can reproduce these illnesses in laboratory animals. We know that we can prevent them in laboratory animals. And we know that the incidences of these things have increased as these chemicals have increased use in the society. When these things first came out in the 1950s, they were a godsend. They protected GIs from getting malaria. They were wonderful. But now, since then, since the 70s, 12% of women can expect to get breast cancer, 16% of men prostate cancer. Diabetes and obesity is expected to affect 1 in 3 people by 2050. And neurodevelopmental disorders have skyrocketed in conjunction with the use of these chemicals.
Can we avoid the problem by drinking bottled water, which
No.
all seems to come from pristine mountain springs?
It does seem to from the advertising, but in fact it comes from the exact same sources as our tap water and drinking water. And New York's tap water is among the best.
Atlanta is one of the big suppliers of a bottled water that I think Coca-Cola sells, which is getting Atlanta City water.
Right. And New York City water is probably as good or better than any city water in the country.
Should people just give up on the idea of having a nice grassy lawn?
I think people should give up on the old-fashioned aesthetic of an absolutely uniform green lawn. But that doesn't mean you don't want to have some turf for your kids to play on and hang out on and to mow so that you have an area for a barbecue, a patio, and a cat, game of football. No, I think what you need to do is realize that you're going to see a few dandelions. You can plant clover with your grass seed because clover fixes nitrogen and supplies nitrogen. You can also let your grass grow to 4 inches and cut it down to 3 instead of cutting it to half an inch.
And you can eat the dandelions.
Because grass is a plant. You can eat the dandelions. In my book, I have some recipes from Ed Giobbe, who's a wonderful cook. But if you, especially in the spring when the dandelion leaves are tender, you can sauté them with olive oil and garlic, and they're delicious.
You recommend something called minimal impact management. What does that involve?
It really just involves making less of an imprint on our natural world and enjoying it. So if you plant native plants, you don't need to water them as much. You don't need fertilizers and pesticides, and you support your native insects. The native insects, like dragonflies, do a great job at eradicating insects that we would consider pests, like mosquitoes.
And organic gardeners use a thing called integrated pest management,
no.
IPM.
No, organic gardeners don't really use IPM. Many places advocate for integrated pest management that uses, and there are many very good aspects of it. It encourages very pointed and targeted use of pesticides, and that is incorporated to some extent into the Great Healthy Yard Project, although I advocate for not using them for the most part. But there are things like barberry that are impossible to pull out. If you can't pull it out, you can cut it down to the stubs and paint those stubs with something like glyphosate, and then it can die. So it makes it very targeted. Use a hundredth of what you would use if you were just broadcasting this all over your yard.
Bill from Long Island, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, fine. I had a question that related to gardeners and the people who cut your lawns and take care of your grass. And I know with the fact that most of these guys and gals out there using the blowers, and they're inhaling all of this stuff that's in the grass and in the air. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely right that that's a big problem. The EPA is now working on new regulations for agricultural workers because they're exposed to the same chemicals that we're using on our lawns, and they acknowledge that these people have increased incidences of breast cancer, prostate cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. We don't need to expose people to that working on our lawns, but we don't avoid it because we're having someone else work on our lawn either, because it winds up in our drinking water.
You mentioned putting prescription medicines down the drain. All prescription medicines are a problem?
Yes, all medicines are a problem. Everything, it doesn't even have to be prescription. It can be anything from aspirin to birth control pills to antidepressants. These are found in treated drinking water in every major city. Now, a certain amount of it will of necessity go in with urine, but most of it comes from people disposing of it that way. And police stations now, many of them take back these drugs, national drug take back, to prevent misuse of them, but also to protect our water.
What about household cleaners?
Many household cleaners have things in them that can disrupt your endocrine system. You can look at the back of your bottles, or you can just buy something like seventh generation that is more natural. On the other hand, you can also use simple old-fashioned recipes. I give some in my book.
Vinegar, baking soda,
lemon juice. Vinegar is a mild acid. Baking soda is a mild base. You don't want to combine them because then you have nothing. But it depends what the application is. A lot of these old-fashioned remedies are incredibly effective. Clorox now has something that is largely citric acid, and it works wonderfully. I'm not sure why they put the blue dye in to market it. But otherwise, it's completely natural and works really well.
Well, I guess you could also use lemons if you want citric acid.
Absolutely, you can use lemons.
Diane Lewis is an internist and a nephrologist. She's written a book called The Great Healthy Yard Project, Our Yards, Our Children, Our Responsibility. It is published by She Writes Press. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me.